I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's Halloween. Everyone's entitled to one good scare. And I'm Sebastian.
You fooled them, but not me. I'm Andy Schossler.
You can't kill the boogeyman. I'm Jordan.
I was so close to going with the see anything you like quote, but I wasn't sure if it would translate.
The answer is no.
No? Oh, okay. And welcome to our Halloween review of Halloween.
Ooh!
Roll is that the thing? Credits. No, okay. Yeah, so this is probably our... No, we've done Psycho. I was going to say, is this one of our more traditional horror movie reviews we've done? I don't think either of you were with the show at the time, but we have done Psycho. And I think, oh, we did.
Funnily enough, the female protagonist in that is Jamie Lee Curtis's mother.
You stole my trip. No.
Really? Oh, sorry. No. I'm joking.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
John
Carpenter was, you know, sort of saw it as a bit of a tribute to her to cast Jamie Lee Curtis here.
Very cool.
But yeah, I mean, we did Psycho. We've done Scream. I guess Scream's kind of more of a modern, more modern take than this was. But
runs completely off the tropes
set
up by Halloween or established by Halloween.
But this is our first of like what I'd say of looking at the Mount Rushmore of horror films in terms of slashes.
Because
we haven't done any Freddy films. We haven't done any Jason films. We haven't done any of the
Nightmare on Elm Street films are fantastic.
Some of them are
my favorite horror series.
Yeah.
At least the first four. Okay. The rest kind of go off the rails a little bit.
And no Texas Chainsaw.
Oh, and all the Freddy vs. Jasons and forget that.
I don't mind Freddy vs. Jason for what it is, but...
Yeah. But yeah, no Leatherface or I'm going to call it Texas Chainsaw movies, but we've done Halloween, which is, I guess, the first of all those films I just listed. So maybe next Halloween we can look at taking another head off the Mount Rushmore.
Maybe.
I can't imagine.
I'd be more than happy to.
So I've pulled up a handy image to walk us through the timeline of the Halloween series.
Oh no.
I could probably have done that for you off the top of my headset.
Because there's so freaking many diverging timelines.
It's a bit of a mess.
This is one of the more consistently regarded as canon films in that it only is not canon for one timeline, which is the Rob Zombie one, in which he just restarted from scratch. So... Maybe I should just leave this to Jordan because if you're aware, like it's probably better than me reading a picture.
I'll use it for reference. All right. So, this one, Halloween, would be canon in everything except for the Rob Zombie films because it still remains canon in the new film that came out last year. Then you've got Halloween 2, which came after this, directly on its like... takes place on the same night or the following day sort of thing, which is Halloween 3 doesn't count because they do like a different concept.
Oh, I want to talk about Halloween 3 in a bit.
Halloween 4, I believe, retcons number 2. Oh, actually, no, it doesn't. It kind of starts over because with Halloween 4, they say that, blanking on her name now, Laurie is like died in like a car accident or something from memory. Which starts off the storyline that goes for the next two movies of the main character being her daughter.
Right.
And then those get retconned in Halloween H2O because Laurie's alive again.
I didn't die. I faked it and changed my name because Michael's crazy.
That's it. That lasts for like two films because...
H2O and then Resurrection.
H2O is where that starts. Resurrection, Laurie's in it for like 10 minutes and gets killed again. So that's that. You've got the Rob Zombie films, which are their own thing that we don't need to talk about. We'll leave that to just don't worry about it. Don't talk about it.
He starts the story from beginning, so yeah, it's just a
complete reboot.
Double, yeah.
Then you've got Halloween 6. Well, I think I kind of skipped that, but that's also is oof, very, how you going? It follows the same timeline as 4 and 5, I think. Let me double check.
So from what I can see, you can go Halloween 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6, or you can just go Halloween
that would be pretty
and
linear.
Then the one that came out last year. If you just wanted to skip everything in between. And yeah. Just
so Halloween from last year shares the same title, but it is technically a sequel. It basically just ignores everything that happened after the first film and just picks up on itself. Really good. I personally really, really like it. I think it's great for like a modern take on like a Halloween film because it is a bit more sort of modern in that it uses more of those tropes and all that sort of stuff. Right. And it's moderately, gory and that sort of thing as far as like a modern horror movie would be. It kind of fits that slasher mold, but it is still really, really well made. I quite like it. But those middle sequels are very, very touch and go.
Halloween 3 is kind of fun, just from a filmmaking standpoint.
It is,
What they were originally intending to do was make a Halloween anthology series. So every film was meant to be its own story set on Halloween, completely unrelated apart from the fact that it's a Halloween movie. But then this one did so well and they needed a sequel. So they did a sequel with Mike Myers again. But then they were like, well, what about that original idea where it's an anthology? So 3 is a completely unrelated story about a company that makes
masks
that will like suck the life out of kids and give the cult that's making these masks immortality and shit.
Silver Shamrock or something, I think it was
called.
Yeah,
that's the one.
Is that the one that's headed by the guy who is also the CEO of OCP and RoboCop?
I think so.
That rings a rough bell. I'll double check for you. But yeah, so then they were like, oh, people didn't like that Halloween movie. They want more Michael Myers.
That's the thing. Like it's pretty well liked now. Like it has a bit of a cult following and it didn't bomb or anything. Like it made plenty of money based on its budget. It just wasn't very popular in like a grander sense because they're like, oh, no Michael Myers, no money. So they quickly brought him back for number 4.
Which is crazy.
And been milking him ever since.
Yes.
But yeah, it's an interesting timeline. When you go down like the divergent path when we were, I just had it up, guys. I lost it. You go down the path of seeing from when, you felt you go 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. When you get to that 4, 5, 6 category, it's like, oh, Michael's a supernatural being. He's a cult that.
Right. Yeah, when they get into the Cult of Thorns stuff.
Ugh. Yeah. But then, or you can go the one to the last one where he's just a serial killer. He's just a crazy mofo. He's strong, but he's not like a fucker. He's not literally.
Honestly, the easiest timeline and the best as far as film quality is just to do that one. Just do the original and then do the new film from last year.
Yep. Which are what? That's a.
Both fantastic films.
1978 and 2018.
So easy to follow.
Time gap there.
Yeah.
Of basic maths, I'm going to say 40 years. That doesn't sound right, though.
It's right.
It is? Well, look at me go. Maybe I did well on that
way,
math test today.
You miss Laurie dying and being magically brought back to life because they needed a convenient story. You can skip all the Jamie Lloyd stuff. It's good in and of itself. You can get rid of all the Cult of Thorn garbage and just enjoy two very good films.
I'm trying to remember if it's number 4 or number 5, but one of them does have Paul Rudd in it, though.
That's number 6.
There you go. Which so maybe that you jump
arguably
back up that one.
Not good.
But Paul Rudd's in it, so and he looks exactly the same.
He does. It's Paul number 6
Rudd.
Is...
Paul Rudd, the actor.
Yeah, Paul Rudd. Really? It's one of his very early, early films.
Okay.
I think the credits may even say introducing Paul Rudd. It may be one of his first films.
Johnny Depp is in Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah.
It's great because he gets eaten by a bed.
They all get their start somewhere. Yeah.
Number 6 is weird because it's when you watch the theatrical cut, it's a fucking mess. Like it just but goes all over the place. It's... You could almost compare it to Tenet from last week in a way. It jumps all over the place. It's hard to follow. Right. But there is a director's cut, which makes the film make a lot more sense. There's not that much that's added. It's like literally maybe like 2 or 3 extra scenes, but the movie just suddenly makes sense.
Okay.
It's one of those movies that got really butchered in cutting.
All right, so Paul Rudd was in that movie. It was the same year that he was also in Clueless. So this,
oh wow!
So
okay.
To give timelines, the Halloween: The Curse of Michael Myers was a 1995 film, which is a lot more recent than I would have pegged it in my brain.
And given I do believe as well the character he plays in that film, I'm pretty sure is Tommy Jarvis.
Tommy Doyle.
Jarvis is from Friday the 13th.
Yes.
Yeah, Tommy Doyle, who's the kid in this film. Right. So there is a bit of a link there as well.
What? He was in Romeo and Juliet? Romeo plus Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann one? Luhrmann,
yeah.
Who did he play in that?
Paul Rudd?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is a great, we should have just on the, Dave Paris. I guarantee there was no Dave in the original screen, in the original text.
To be honest, I only remember John Leguizamo from that film.
Because he's good in everything.
He really is.
He really, really is.
Including the Mario Brothers.
What was the actor we were looking for though? Because I jumped into your Halloween movie to find the actor and I couldn't.
It was from number three.
Yeah, but
the head of the company.
Yeah, the head of that company.
I couldn't tell you what his name is.
Who's doing the whole cult thing. Is also I was asking if that was the same guy.
Is Tom Atkins? Do you mean him?
I don't know him by name.
Well, I couldn't tell you this. I'm an old.
Is he the
man.
CEO in RoboCop?
I don't have his.
You're jealous. RoboCop would have to be pretty high up in his credits if he was.
87 was RoboCop.
It's not listed though. It would. I feel like it would be in like his.
You'd think so.
But in saying, I don't know what his title character name isn't CEO Blah. So I don't. I have to guess what the CEO's name is.
Sure, it could just be another old white man.
It could be. Anyway, Halloween.
Ooh.
Where were we? We went off on a tangent of
Paul Rudd came up. point is, oh yeah, Dan O'Hurley.
That sounds about right.
He's in RoboCop, but his title in number two, he's credited as the old man.
Right.
That checks out.
Yeah. And in the first RoboCop, what is he credited as?
The old man.
The old man. Yeah, okay, the old man.
Yeah, that's what I'm like.
That's what he's introduced to.
I was pretty close.
Yeah. So there is a character that's in this. Anyway. Halloween.
So slasher films are awful and you shouldn't waste your time on them because they're a waste of time.
In general, I would agree.
Come now. Don't be so harsh.
I would never begrudge anybody for liking something, you know, whatever it happens to be. That's fine. You like it. That's completely up to you. I don't get it. I sit down to watch a slasher film when I'm compelled to because I would never do it off my own back. I just don't get out of it what other people seem to really enjoy about it. I don't follow the scares. I don't think it's particularly believable. It always seems, I don't want to say contrived, but that's the only word that I can think of that's appropriate because the whole thing.
It's a fair criticism of the genre.
Well, the whole thing is designed to eliminate people until you get down to the final showdown where one person gets away, you know, either by being virtuous or clever or whatever happens to be. And the villain either gets their comeuppance or quite typically just gets away and that's it. It's a very open-ended story. And I don't know. I never enjoy them.
That's fair enough. I don't know what it is that I like about them. I just enjoy them.
Okay. You
know? I think they're fun. Because like that, for the most part, like you're just a nice, like simple thing. And like, I don't know. I just like, I don't know if slashers are necessarily what I like, but I enjoy like horror movies. And I guess they're just a subset of that. I think they just wind up being so popular because like it's not like slasher movies in general are good, but there's a very sort of select group of series that are like popular. And I find that it's just based off the characters more than anything, as opposed to it being like, oh, slasher movies are good. It's like, no, like these particular characters and these villains or these archetypes are what's popular. Because I think if you look at it from a sense of like, there's so many slasher movies that are absolutely awful that nobody likes and I think nobody talks about, which is why it has such a stigma.
Right. From my understanding, that's part of the appeal. They are a bit campy.
Yeah, it can be definitely. Like, I mean, some of my favorite like horror movies or slasher movies are just campy and like arguably not good.
And Halloween's not exempt from that because the acting is not...
It's not fantastic.
Pristine from everybody.
I only really...
Not even a little bit.
I really picked up on that on this viewing. It's not something that I'd picked up on previously because I do love Halloween. Like it would be one of my favorite horror movies, but I've not watched it in quite like a few years probably, like this particular version. And like watching it back this time, I was like, oh yeah, that's some... Yeah, some of that's not very good, hey.
I want to draw a distinction from between slashes and just... suspenseful films in general. Like slashes are a subset yeah, the suspenseful. And I like suspenseful films. I like thrillers. I mean, we were talking about The Terminator a few weeks ago.
Sure.
And arguably that's a slasher film just with, you know, a monster that isn't human.
Yeah, I guess so.
And yet I enjoy that, I think, because in part it's so detached from reality that it's not a case of it being plausible, just that you can sort of get how that would happen in that universe. Whereas slashers in general, where there's just a serial killer who's, you know, a bit mad or whatever the case is. I know later on they explain that Mike Myers is, you know, a supernatural thing or some sort of manifestation of some, you know, power.
Some kind
whatever.
Of a... Well, I'm trying to remember what it is that they try to explain it away as now.
But it's like, you know, as far as this film is concerned, a curse. Okay. As far as this one's concerned, he's just a bit loopy because he killed his sister as a child, and so he's just got this. Well, no, he's just got that killing gene, you know, whatever you want to call it, in him, and he's
a shark boy.
And I don't buy it. I see that and I just go, ugh, immediately my eyes roll. And
that's
I just,
fine,
I can't enjoy this. This isn't real.
That's the thing with a lot of horror movies though. Like you can't really, most of them are hard to sit and be like, yeah, okay, I'd buy that. It's like, you kind of have to, it's watching a horror movie or a slasher movie is exactly like watching wrestling. You need to suspend your disbelief and just enjoy it for what it is.
Trying to win me over.
That's actually explained quite a bit. Yeah. Thank you.
I was going to say, I mean, it sounds like what you're after is, and I'm not saying because it ends up being done badly, but it sounds like what you're after is the sort of backstory and lore they throw into the Michael Myers character
in the sequels.
Where like, hey, he's a spoop.
The reason I bring that up is that John Carpenter also made The Thing, which is another... It's not a slasher film, but it's kind of the same model. You know, people are getting picked off. And Alien has the same sort of thing. People are getting picked off.
But
and
which
there's the monster.
Is The Thing is one of the greatest movies ever put to cinema.
That's correct.
That's the difference. I'm not saying this is not a good film. I'm just saying The Thing is really good.
And not even made that much longer after Halloween.
Yeah, no, I was reading about it. He actually, the person that he was like working with on the Halloween sequel, they like had a falling out because he used making The Thing and I think whatever he made afterwards, maybe Gangs of New York or something like that. Actually, no, that's not what it was. It was whatever
when
movie
was
he made after
Escape
The Thing.
From New York. Was
Escape
that
from New York.
Was that in between?
Yeah, not Gangs of New York, sorry. Yeah, so like they were meant to make Halloween 2 and he was like, okay, I'll make it if you let me make The Thing.
Ah.
And then in like some meeting where the other guy wasn't in, he was like, okay, but I'm also going to make this movie first too, but don't tell him. And then they had like a big falling out over it. Yeah, because he didn't want to make Halloween 2. He was like, no, I don't want to do it. Like,
John Carpenter and I have the same birthday, I believe many years apart.
Is that what?
That's why he's a genius. It all makes sense.
No, so I wanted to bring up the distinction between suspense films in general and slashers specifically. Yeah. In that The Thing is also John Carpenter, also a suspenseful film, and kind of arguably, you know, in the framework, the same thing. Yet The Thing is incredibly enjoyable, and Halloween just isn't for me. I get bored straight away.
Like believable?
It's not. and that's what I'm saying. That like The Terminator and other things, they're so far removed from reality.
Yeah, like it's far enough away that you're like, okay, it doesn't need to be believable because it's so absurd.
But yet it can still be logically consistent in its own universe and you can understand that.
Yeah.
But you're not trying to... I think Halloween and other films that just play the villain as being some mad killer, even Scream to a certain extent.
Scream I can get along with more than this film.
It's
because it has charisma.
I know it's a satire of the genre in general and it brought it back and all those things, but it's still kind of... unenjoyable because it's sort of believable.
Yeah.
But then the second you start to see some holes in it, my eyes immediately roll back and I just go, oh, okay. So now the writer is just making decisions, you know, that aren't a consequence of what would happen in real life. He just wants to have the story go this way. And I know every story has that. It's it's a difficult thing to explain, but when it's too realistic, it's too unbelievable.
Yeah, all at the same time. Yeah, I getcha.
Sorry, I started reading on the thing and got distracted. I love that movie.
It's a great movie.
But Halloween, it's a spoopy boy with a fun. We're going to trivia in general. Can I please provide the one piece of trivia that everyone knows?
Do.
Okay, but I'll attach part that maybe not everyone knows. Maybe. So the mask that he wears, it's a William Shatner mask with the eyes cut out and spray painted white. Oh. That's the part that everyone does know. Mm. What originally they were looking at doing is actually having like a clown mask with bright red hair, which would be sort of like an emulation of when he's a little kid and he kills his sister.
Oh.
And they did it and it was really creepy, but for some reason they just weren't happy with it. And they ended up doing this mask that was like $2 like from a costume store,
yeah.
Like a Star Trek mask, and just spray painted it white, took out the eyes, and it looked creepy as fuck.
Well, I think that's the way, because like they... Like the clown stuff would have been like scary, I guess. But I guess like what they were going for was that sort of like just faceless, like spoop.
Right.
Because I guess they did refer to like the character itself as just like the shape. So like that face like works for that.
And also just having the white mask like in the darkness being seen.
It's unsettling.
Yeah. It's you'd think the scariest thing is something that you can't see, but it's also it's sometimes a little line. The thing that you can kind of see can be scarier because you can see it coming, but you just... Your perception's not quite there to make you feel safe enough, and that can work really well too.
Well, John Carpenter had to be creative with the visuals and how he set everything up, because the budget for the film was tiny, 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 $325,000
pittance.
Damn. Half of that went towards the cameras, the Panavision cameras, just so it could have a 2.35:1 aspect. Mm. And have the letterboxing, but the film was made on a shoestring budget, really, and it performed phenomenally.
Mm.
Like box office gross just in the US alone was $47 million.
That's great.
And unfortunately for the year 78, there aren't worldwide figures for that. So, and you know, since all the licensing and such, how much it would have made, terrific money spinner.
Well, I mean, just prop-wise, because I used to work at it was a pop culture store. We could buy movie memorabilia and stuff. We could order it in. And that $2 William Shatner mask, spray-painted white, if you want to get a replica of that from this movie, you're spending between $200 to $500 on just that.
Mm. Wow!
Yeah, because it's the, you know, prop, not a movie used prop, but a prop that would be movie quality. Yeah, and like, that's the shit you get. Like, it's, expensive.
And literally all they did was pay a dollar at a mask shop.
And maybe a dollar for Halloween.
They did a lot of other tricks like that.
I have one.
Yeah.
Top of my head. The house that he hides, the main house, the one that's, what do you call it? The one that he kills his sister in and then gets abandoned. So that house was actually, it was either abandoned or just in horrible state. So what they actually did was they refurbished the house for the opening scene where the kid, young Michael Myers, kills his family, and then tore it all back to make it look abandoned.
No way.
And film the rest of it, which seems like on a tight budget, you would just film out of order. But they obviously wanted it to be in a slightly different state of disrepair when it was abandoned. They actually repaired it.
You could control
it down. Yeah.
Incredible.
Which was only interesting because it was like you'd think the other way around would be like you just film everything out of order. Like you don't normally film in sequence, you know, unless you have to for whatever
you've
reason.
You've got a crew of carpenters, you know, buy the place, do your filming, do it up.
Are you suggesting that he John Carpenter, so his whole family is carpenters?
It's their namesake, sir.
Is that what you just suggest?
I'm saying... You've got a team of people
who may or may not be carpenters.
You put their skills to use and maybe finance some other side projects.
Yeah. That's all the trivia that I have. Oh, apart from, I only noticed this because it was pointed out on this YouTube channel. The pumpkin at the beginning, during the title, the eye on our right hand side is carved to look like a silhouette of Michael's head.
Oh.
And the nose is a knife being held.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's apparently a lot more obvious in the one that came out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's meant to be him because they recarved it a little bit to look a bit more like him. But apparently that was meant to be a side shot of his head and him holding a butcher's knife. So worth a look next time you see it. I'm trying to find a still image of it actually. Makes sense. You, but yeah. And now I'm out of trivia.
There were no costumes. All the actors had their own clothes. There was just no budget for any
Come as you are.
Come as you are is basically it. In fact, Jamie Lee Curtis bought clothes for the thing. Yeah. It was set in Illinois in the autumn, of course, for Halloween, but it was shot in California in the spring.
Yeah.
So to make it look like autumn and all the leaves falling and such, they purchased paper leaves from a decorator, a wedding decorator or something, and painted them the different colors of red and yellow, and reused them for the shots. They would sprinkle them on the lawn whenever they needed them, and
very clever.
Even paper leaves, they couldn't afford to double up on those. No, just collect them back, and back we go for the next.
Pick those up. We need them later.
Christopher Lee was originally up for the role of Loomis, which went to Don Pleasance. And he turned it down. He regretted doing that later on.
Can imagine.
But originally he turned it down because of the low pay. Mm. Now, Don Pleasance shot for 5 days and took $20,000 for it.
That's fair pay for
$4,000 a day. Yeah. Doesn't seem that low
in
1978. But Christopher Lee wasn't exactly.
What was he getting paid elsewhere?
Well, Jamie Lee Curtis for being the only got $8,000. I mean, I know the whole film. Yeah. I know. Loomis is a main character, but arguably Laurie is the main workhorse
of the film.
Yeah.
Scott pointed out to me, and I thought it was really funny. So Christopher Lee obviously turned down the role. He was regarding it as one of his biggest career mistakes. Right. And somebody pointed out the same Christopher Lee that starred in Police Academy 7, Trip to Moscow, whatever it is. I'm this was the mistake.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, had he got it, he could have starred in Halloween 4, 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9.
I actually really like Loomis. I mean,
he's a great character.
Yeah, I haven't seen many of bits of the last ones because this isn't my genre. Mm-hmm. But he's a good character actor in this film. As far as I can tell from what I've seen and read, his character gets a little bit stupid, but so does the plot, to be fair, with all the cult shit. But he's a good, I like his performance.
I think he just progressively loses his mind with each film, so he does get a bit loopy and a bit stupid. But yeah, like you said, as does the plot.
So. Yeah.
It was shot out of sequence, so in order to...
Why did they fucking do the house then? Motherfuckers.
It was shot out of sequence, and in order to help Jamie Lee Curtis sort of have a sense of where they are in the film, John Carpenter had a fear meter constructed to assist. It's kind of nice.
You're right about a 7.
Threat level midnight.
Yeah. Good. And we're spinning the fear wheel. And the original script was titled The Babysitter Murders, and it took place over several nights. But one of the reasons why it was condensed down to one night, not just because it makes for a better story, was also budgetary, so that if everything takes place on one night, there are no costume changes.
Yeah.
And
I'd also read they just did a search to see if anyone had registered a movie with the title Halloween, and no one had ever done it. So they were okay, we'll do that. That's
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Halloween
released it. Released at Halloween, perfect.
So that obviously needs to be one night as well. So it worked out well.
And people love the film. It carries a 7.8 rating on IMDb.
Less than The Thing, but of course it does. Yeah. Of course it's less.
Rotten Tomatoes has 96% critical and 89% audience. Mm. So
I think it's one of the few horror films that Siskel and Ebert ever gave a positive review to.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I was watching, it was just a film about the franchise, and there was a little excerpt from an episode of their show where they were talking about just essentially how awful slasher films are. And they were just it's just devolved from everything that Halloween did really well. So it's weird that it's for the film that it is, it's not gratuitous or anything like a lot of other slasher films are, but it is, sort of highly, highly regarded even by people who traditionally don't like those kind of films.
I was watching a few reviews and commentaries on it.
Mm.
And one thing that kept on coming up is that Halloween isn't gory.
Yeah, whereas, not at all.
You know, slasher films are known for their gore.
Halloween 2 is a lot gorier.
I think they kind of pushed for it because by that point, Friday the 13th and stuff was out. So we need to up it a little bit, I guess.
These damn kids ruined the game for us.
There are a few things that really worked for Halloween, and that's that it got the suspense right,
mm-hmm.
and it was shot on a budget, so John Carpenter had to be clever in composing the film so that you got a lot of information without having to show a lot of effects or show a very elaborate shots. And even the lighting was an issue because, you know, you can't afford all the lights, so you use the darkness to advantage and you get a lot of those shots of, you know, foreground, background, fuzzy, you know, white mask against a shadow. It's very evocative. Mm. Looks very well. It's a cheap movie that does not look cheap at all.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, we say this all the time. Like, how many times have we seen a movie where someone has like an unlimited budget and it's just kind of... but then you watch someone that has these restraints.
Scooby-Doo, and they have Monsters Unleashed.
Exactly. That unlimited budget. But then we see something where like someone's hands are a bit tied and they just have to work with what they have, and it forces a different level of creativity. I mean, my example is always Community. The seasons in which Dan Harmon was a little bit more restrained by the studios tend to be funnier and a bit more consistent. Whereas then you watch like his Yahoo season, like his very final season, where he kind of had carte blanche, and it's not bad, but it's nowhere near as good as it was at its peak. Right. And it's because he had no restraints. And it's not, I'm in two camps. Don't restrain the creators, but also restrain the creators.
Well, no, you can, like, just as an example off the top of my head, you can get around like censoring regulations in a very creative way. You can, you know, unwittingly start memes just by trying to skirt, you know, swear words and try and use euphemisms. Yep. You know, you've got this script, you want to try and beat that. South Park is great. I know South Park does a lot of swearing, but they get away with a lot as well.
Side note, that pandemic special is fantastic.
I haven't seen it. Okay.
So good.
Thank you for watching. Where is South Park available? Because
I had to download it.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I think you can probably get it on like SBS On Demand or maybe.
You used to be able to anyway. I don't know now. Right.
I know it was briefly on Netflix here.
I think saw it the other day, but I don't know how
season
recent it
was.
Yeah.
Okay.
God, so I funny. Do also think, because it used to be on Hulu as well, which is where I would watch
okay.
it. But I think they've now gone exclusive to maybe HBO Go, I think, in the US.
Which I'll be getting, mind you, when the Justice League comes out.
Yeah.
I'll be paying for it for 2 months.
I don't know. I very legally obtained the pandemic special.
Yep.
But in having rules that you're trying to get around and being a bit of a smartass in how you get around them, that can, you know, create a lot of interesting, you know, memes essentially that carry on through the show. They become running gags through the show.
So good stuff. Like I said, and there's nothing. We're never going to criticize something for being low budget. Unless they overreach. That's it.
Unless it's obvious. If you mask it, well done. If you don't, then what did you really do?
I'm a big fan of the YouTube channel Dead Meat. They do the Kill Count show. Great hosts, great stuff. I've talked about it a variety hour thousands of times.
Shout out James for my current Shutter trial.
Oh, wonderful.
Thanks for the code.
But he just reviewed the original Invisible Man movie.
I saw that pop up this morning. I didn't have time to watch it.
It's incredible what they actually can do given when that film actually came out. I'll try to find the date because it was really early on.
It's like 33 something, isn't it?
And the actual effects that the stuff that they were able to trick through and do given that they're making a freaking film about an invisible person in the 30s is like Jordan and I would struggle to put our heads together now with our fucking computers and digital, like, to work out how to do this. We'd be like, I think we need to own something green. I don't know. Like, but they did it all without that. And it's, like they wanted to have like the one shot he showed us was just show like the footprints appearing in the snow as he's walking. But obviously they can't digitally remove someone walking because they don't have the technology. Mm. And it was literally a case of underneath the snow, they would have like footprints that they would pull out.
Because
it was like, and it would simulate the foot going onto it. And it was just like the things you have to do when you just don't have the technology. And
that's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know which film it was. I was watching a documentary just on this, you know, filmmakers making, you know, cheap tricks to do it. Steven Spielberg, in one of his earlier films, you know, there's a scene where some group of people are being, you know, shelled by mortars or something. It's a war movie, and they're just running along. And to film that, what they did was they just got a plank of wood that was resting on a rock or something, put a little bit of dirt on the bottom side, and as people ran over it, they flung the dirt up. And you just play a mortar shell falling and the explosion sound and you see the dust come up and that's it. You've got your explosion.
That's great. Yeah.
There was this, I forget his actual name. The guy that directed Shazam, he was a horror movie director before. He did Lights Out. I just can't remember his name off my head. But he's got a YouTube show where he'll just show you how to get around making film stuff with no budget. And he like,
I remember. I think you showed me that.
Well, because he made a fucking dolly, but he made it using like toilet paper rolls and stuff. Gift wrapping rolls and stuff.
Yeah.
To get a camera to be able that you can almost use like a steady camera, but on a track to draw back to do certain shots. And he's just like, this is just how you make it if you're just filming at home and you don't want to spend, you want to spend like $50 on some cardboard and stuff like that. And that's what he did for some of his like independent films. You're like, motherfucker. Like,
he had like genius fucking, like things. Full like tracking shots just on like PVC pipes.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's like so clever.
$2 wheels. Like so creative.
And I always appreciate more that from like the problem solving. Like it would be great to be like, okay, we need to film a shot that looks like this. And this is, and like, apart from the camera, we just have everything that's around us to our disposal. Well, what is it? And you're like, wow, what can you do? Yeah. Whereas in Hollywood, they'd be like, well, no, our camera's on a moving arm. You just like,
we've got four people to operate it.
Exactly.
And a catering team to handle them. And
which really makes you appreciate jobs like this movie. This movie didn't do anything insane, but they had such a limited scope of what they could actually pick from. And they fucking, they nailed it. Like it's
nailed it.
Just from that standpoint, it's impressive. Oh, and also the Invisible Man film I'm talking about was 33.
Okay.
So yeah, like I said, like very old. It is obviously it's black and white. Like it had no right to have a character on screen that wasn't actually there, but they did it and it's good shit.
And thank goodness John Carpenter had a success because then he could go on to make The Thing and Escape from New York.
Yes. The Thing. The Thing is amazing.
Actually, Don Pleasance again, the president in Escape from New York.
Oh, he is too.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I was just thinking when we mentioned him before, I was trying to remember like what else I've seen him in.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, yeah.
He's surely dead by now, right?
Yes,
I unfortunately.
Think so. Oh, he died in 95.
Yeah.
Yeah, the age. Oh, of course. Yeah, because he wasn't in. Yep, I can remember now. Yeah.
I think he's, if I'm not mistaken, it might have been maybe number 6. I think he actually passed away shortly after they shot that film and they went back to do a lot, like some reshoots and stuff. And obviously he wasn't there. And there's like a few scenes in the film where like a lot of the dialogue is just really stunted between himself and another character. And it's because it was shot after he passed.
If I'm thinking of the right one, it's also, there's like the hooded cult figure.
Yeah, that's the same one.
Does a lot of stuff in shots to make certain things happen that I think were meant to be him. I'm trying to remember. It was the one with Paul Rudd.
It was number
the
6, yeah. Curse, yeah.
All right, any more trivia? Or do we want to, I mean, this is only a short plot, so I'm happy to go through more trivia if you have it, just because the plot is, it's 5 kills in the whole movie. Like it's not your atypical go crazy.
That's it for trivia.
Don't really have to go too in depth. It is what it is.
Okay, well, we start on Halloween night, I guess, right? That's safe to say.
1960 something.
And a bunch of horny kids
1963.
Died.
No, this is firstly his sister. I don't think she was that horny. She was very young.
Michael may have been horny. Her titties were out.
That's true. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So it starts in 1963. We start the shot with a really cool POV of just young Michael Myers walking through the house, getting the knife. He's wearing, the whole thing's done through his mask. He's wearing a little clown mask. And yep, kills his sister, gets caught by his parents, police come. And then we jumped, what, 20 years later, is it?
15.
So how old would he have been?
He'd be 20, early 20s, I guess. Because he would have been like, what, maybe like 6 or 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, thereabouts. Anyway, he's being studied by Dr. Loomis at this facility somewhere, but doesn't matter because he's escaped, right? It's the night before Halloween when we come back. And effectively, it's just like a Michael turning up, stalking the people that are living. Yeah.
It's creepy. It's really well done how he's... how he does stalk them. There's the implication that even if you can't see him in the scene, he's
around,
he's watching and knows exactly where his victims are and then goes after them.
Yeah, there is a great shot, I think maybe of either the police chief or it might be Loomis, where like they're in like the central like frame of the shot and if you look for it, you can see Michael like drive the car behind them.
Right, okay.
So Michael rocks up. Loomis is pretty sure he knows what's going to happen. He's trying to get shit
knows
sorted.
How to drive despite being in a hospital for 15 years.
Yep.
And he's quite good at it.
and then it's Halloween night and he kills five people.
I watched a few reviews after the film just to get a sense of where it was, because it's not my sort of genre, and maybe somebody else would say something. I came across the pitch meeting review of Halloween. and just on the driving cars, he says that, yeah, that's all right. They acknowledge that in the film, and that's fine. They acknowledged it. We can move on now. We don't have to explain how he does it. The film knows he doesn't know how to drive a car, and that's fine. He can just drive a car now.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
I think there's just like a...
Don't worry about it.
There's like a little throwaway line where like someone says to Loomis, like, maybe someone gave him lessons in the hospital. Yeah. I guess they have like a driver's ed program in their rec time or something.
Yep, that's right. He never talked. Maybe this was something that was going to, you know, motivate him to talk.
Maybe.
No, yep. No, it was just another failed attempt at getting him to... And now he knows how to drive. Great.
Whoops.
Yeah. Maybe we should rethink those... Those butchering classes.
I mean, like I said, it's an hour and a half film or so. It's very short. There's like it's less than digestible. Half a dozen kills.
Yeah, it's not like it's, you know, difficult to watch. No. It's just, for me, it's difficult to enjoy.
Sure.
I guess I want to highlight.
But not because it's bad, just because it's not subject matter that I'm particularly interested in, yeah.
I liked one of the kills in particular when he stabs the guy to the wall so hard that his body is held up by the knife. That's pretty cool.
That's classic.
And then I like the iconic thing where he rocks up in the ghost costume with the glasses over the top. It's not even creepy. It's sort of goofy. I guess it's kind of creepy, but it's like goofy creepy.
Yeah.
And it's just a really interesting thing to do. but I'm entertained at this stage. I don't know. I feel like there's just not that much to say, and it's not the film's fault. For me, it's purely because...
It's so simple.
Yeah.
Because you can't really go too in depth unless you like just go through every beat of the film.
And like, I guess it's because everything this film's done, we've also seen done hundreds of times after.
That's it. Like,
maybe it's better, maybe worse.
The catalyst for thousands of lesser films.
Like, what's the first knock knock joke? No one even knows. Yeah. I would assume. Maybe somebody knows. But that's my point is, but how many knock knock jokes are there?
Mm.
Millions. Should there be? No. But there are. Yeah, it's good and tense. I'd be more curious to see how this formula holds itself up for like the newer one, the 2018 one, because I'm sure with modern sensibilities, it would feel a lot more engaging and maybe a bit more scary for me. But
I do really recommend that film. Like, if you enjoyed this one, it is like, it's different, but it has the same sort of sensibilities where it's not like overly trying to be like a modern horror film. Like, it's a Halloween film. Like, because the way that this one's laid out is that it is, you know, it has those like really tense sort of moments. It all flows really nicely. It's not like a real like jump scary chop chop, like cuts everywhere kind of modern horror film. It is really good. So yeah, if you liked this one, I would definitely recommend watching it.
Yeah, I always think then, like, because this one obviously was well loved in its time, but then watching back, it feels really quaint and outdated.
It does feel like a 70s film.
I always think like, well, with the modern one, which is probably a lot faster and a lot more, how do I put this? Probably
rubbish.
Paced a lot better as well. I do wonder how that would also feel another 40 years from now. We're going to watch that and be like, oh, I can't believe that movie was so slow, because we'll be watching movies like Tenet where everyone speaks at 1.5 speed or some shit. You know what I mean?
And you still won't know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm always curious to see, of the idea, but I'm not going to live long enough to 40 years.
Probably. You might be. Don't sell yourself short, Seb. You're in fine health.
You think you're going to live 240?
That's there's a lot of...
Is that your goal?
I'm just thinking about the amount of people that might want to strangle me between now and then. But yeah, I enjoyed it for what it was. It just fits, like with Andrew, for me, it's just not my cup of tea. And I wish it was for the sake of the review, but I can't pretend to... I can pretend to love something that I don't. Wow, isn't horror great? But I don't know. Like, if this was The Thing, this would be a 7-hour episode of me talking about all the intricacies and all the things that this could have been this and could have been that. And that's not to say The Thing is better. It is better, but that's not the cause. For me, it's just, it has so much more going on that there's more points.
There's a lot more to talk about. That's the thing, even as the horror fan at the table, like, I do love the film, but I don't have a lot to say about it because it's very simple. It is what it is. It's like a classic for the genre. It definitely, you know, sort of started off, well, I guess Psycho came first, but really it set a lot of the tone and the tropes and stuff for a lot of the slasher films that would follow.
But even then, I'd argue Psycho had more going on.
Oh, definitely.
And I mean, maybe somebody wants to have the argument of Carpenter versus Hitchcock. That's somebody else's argument. I don't really care.
Prison Rules or?
Yes. No.
Hitchcock.
He's bigger, but he's also, didn't Hitchcock, wasn't he a draft dodger? Whereas Carpenter, he's a carpenter, you see. That's, I don't know.
So he knows where the bodies are buried?
He knows what hammer to use, I guess. I don't know. Well, I mean, we don't have to beat a dead horse then. We can jump to verdicts, unless there's this particular scene that anyone, like I said, those two were my favorite kills, like pinning against the wall. That was good, but yeah.
To be honest, there's no scenes that I don't like. So my favorite scene is the whole film.
Maybe just him driving the car. We'll highlight that as the best moment of the film. But
when Michael's ripping skids, that's the best.
That would be great. We can't find him. He's just in this car park. All right, well, we'll head to verdicts.
Heard the good, you've heard the bad, a lot of opinions, a couple facts, it's verdict time.
It's fine.
If you're a fan of the genre, you know this film.
Yep.
And you don't need us to tell you it's good.
It's very much, like Seb said, very much on the Mount Rushmore of horror films. It's a classic. If you like horror films, I don't know why you wouldn't like it. It pretty much started the genre that you like, so, you know, it has that going for it. If you don't like horror films, listen to Seb and Andy. It's fine. If you do, listen to me. It's great. Great film. Classic.
This is a weird comparison to make, but just throwing it back to our most recent review from now where we did Tenet, it raises a question for me. Would I rather a simple film that does what it does as well as it can, or a complex film that maybe doesn't hit 10 out of 10s, but it asks more questions of the audience? And for me, it's like, it legitimately, I don't know where I fall on that, because this film is more consistently made than Tenet, but Tenet engaged me in a way that's incomparable to this.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I fall, because this film never once asked me to think, but it did. It did a better and more consistent job, whereas Tenet didn't, but it made me and it engaged me. And I honestly don't know. It might probably just a mood thing. Right now, I'm feeling more. right now, I'm feeling more in the Tenet camp. Like, I'd rather be engaged than neglected, in a sense.
Sure.
But who knows? Tomorrow, I might be like, no, I just want the thing to be right. You know, I just want the best version of what you got. But that's not to say this is bad. It's not. It's great for what it is. But for what it is, it's just. It's
very simple and doesn't ask anything of you.
Yeah.
Doesn't make you think.
And maybe, I mean, sometimes you're in the mood for that. Sometimes you just want to put a movie on to have noise in the background. And
I mean, if you decide to watch,
you're happy. Sounds like seagulls.
If you want to think, put on like 5 through 8 and ask yourself why. Why have you done this? Why are you doing this? Why do you continue to do this?
Yep.
I'm making dinner and playing the Saw movies.
What's I don't like the Saw movies. It's not my genre, but even they will ask more of you.
Wow, there's a lot going on, especially when you get pretty deep into that series. You've got to do a lot of thinking.
I don't want
to. Well, it's just they try and make it puzzles.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Halloween is not a puzzle. It's very straightforward. It's a guy hunting down people. We don't even really get a reason for why he picked these particular people, he's other than their family. And they're not, but yeah, well, I suppose once a series goes on. But I mean, this film in particular, it doesn't try and explain it. It just says, this is what's going on, and people are.
Did we touch on that she's family and not family, depending on what timeline you follow?
She's the adopted.
We didn't mention that.
Yeah.
So there's a certain timeline where Laurie is Michael's adopted sister.
I think
adopted sister. Yeah.
But then she's not. It literally depends on what, from movie one, it depends on what order you travel
where
in,
you go.
Whether she is or isn't, or whether she pretended to be and wasn't. It's just.
So
it's
one through six, I think. Yes, family.
Yep.
Resurrection onwards, no.
And then the new one.
And then the new one, no.
But regardless of what the relationship is, it's not. Important.
It's not imperative to enjoying this film, no.
I think it's actually creepier that it's just some random person that he's pinpointed rather than this family window.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, I think the random selection is scarier than I'm coming after my sister.
Yeah.
I think if the only thing you do is watch this film to appreciate how a film can be good and made on a budget, maybe you're not doing it, the justice that it deserves from somebody who likes, you know, the slasher film and can appreciate it like that. But I certainly don't think it's a bad film. It's not something I'm interested in.
Yeah.
But it's good for what it is. And my goodness, you know, to make a film off that little money
yeah.
that looks it's this
impressive
good.
Impressive in and of itself.
That's so impressive.
Mm. Sweet. Well, I guess we'll be back on Monday. I can't tell you guys what we're doing on next Monday because we've
Do
actually-
we not know yet?
No, I worked it out during this because we had to move things around because of all the theatrical releases that were canceled. Until Christmas. Christmas is the only movie between now and then that has not changed. We have 8 slots to fill. So we'll work that out off mic. But I was going to hold you guys back after we finish this one so we can work out what the hell we're at least doing for next fortnight. But yeah, we've got 8 slots. And I'm like, well, there are 7 Tremors movies. But no, that's a joke. We're not doing that. But let's do socials and then we'll have a secret meeting afterwards and we can work it out.
Find us on Instagram at Second Take Podcast, or if you live in the future, you can tweet us at Second Take TNC.
Facebook is facebook.com/Second Take. You can also follow me on Twitter at JordanMSPP.
You can follow me at Bastion_James. Our website is secondtakepodcast.com, or shoot us an email at secondtakepodcast@gmail.com. Hell, if you have an idea for what we can cover between now and then, send it through, but I guarantee you we're fixing it in this meeting and it's going to be done and you can't stop us. We also have a Patreon, patreon.com/secondtake. Yeah, we'll be back on Monday with something good.
A film.
It's probably good because why would we pick something bad to review? Why would we do that?
Smurfs.
Second Take Podcast is recorded within the Moreton Bay region of Queensland, Australia, and acknowledges this region's original owners, namely the Jinnabara, Cubby Cubby, and Yugara people. Second Take Podcast respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of these lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, for they hold the memories, the traditions, the cultures and hopes of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.